Hello, everyone, and welcome to the episode 11 of the Office Hours podcast. We're welcoming back Mo, and we're going to continue our conversation. This is, as I said, episode 11. We've crossed the 10-episode threshold, which seems like a tiny little milestone. I guess to set the next milestone for ourselves, maybe 25 episodes would be a good one, because it's like a half to 50, so it's a nice number. Please join the Telegram. The link to the channel will be in the description. Join the Discord if you'd like as well. I'm thinking that maybe we'll open the Telegram channel. So if you want to submit a topic or a question and we would discuss it in the next episode, you can do it there. I think that would be fun. And yeah, let's get on with it.
How are you doing, Vasily?
I'm doing well. I mean, we're in the final days of summer, getting a little bit of warm weather. It's exciting. I still get a chance to, you know, walk outside bare feet in the morning and drink my coffee and, you know, enjoy the sun. I think the opportunity for that will start shrinking pretty soon, so I gotta get most of it. I'm hitting the road next week. I'm going to see some friends up north to work on a little side business together. So next episodes are likely going to be a little bit more low tech, as I can't really bring the entire setup with me. So we'll see how that goes. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to continue in my absence.
For sure. We're going to try to make do with what we have. So yeah, 25 episodes. We're looking forward to it.
25 episodes. Here we go.
We're looking forward to it. So yeah, today I wanted to talk to you about some things. Actually, my experience over the week. I made a decision to actually actively seek out more tech communities, you know, more people in the industry. I remember before COVID, the pandemic, we used to have this event where people attend like in person, you get to meet people, and then, you know, sometimes it's easier to network, but I find that these days most of the networking is usually like online on platforms like LinkedIn. Even though like we still go attend the conferences like virtually, I feel it's slightly different to what it used to be. But I'm curious to know, what's your experience like with like tech communities and networking generally?
Yeah, good question. Definitely COVID thrown a huge wrench in the whole scene. Last few years, even before COVID, I think it was, for me, it was a little bit more opportunistic. Like, we had a pretty healthy meetup scene in Vancouver for a while. And in fact, a lot of the people that I know in the scene and a lot of the opportunities to work at different companies, they mostly came about through various meetups. And I guess when I say it was opportunistic is I used to work downtown. When I was working at a boot camp, I was downtown like a couple of days out of a week. Like, my main job wasn't downtown, so I still had to commute. But I had a reason to be downtown a whole bunch of days out of a week. So whenever any kind of meetups were happening, they usually are confined to downtown because, you know, that's where everybody can get. And so it was really easy. It was really easy to attend meetups. There were several sort of popular spots. Like, a couple of companies were hosting these at their own office. And so it was like all the usual suspects at all the usual places discussing cool things, interesting things. So that was a very, very thriving scene. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to talk about all sorts of different topics. And I thought overall it was pretty wonderful because, you know, for a lot of people, especially if they're newer in the industry, if they're like more introverted, if they don't like the attention, it was still a great opportunity to be present. And the cool thing about Meetup is that you don't necessarily have to actively participate in it. You can just be present. And, you know, if you go there a couple of sessions and then you pick up the courage to speak, that's perfectly fine too. Because, you know, people around you become more familiar. people kind of know who you are. You say hello to people, they say hello to you back, so you don't feel like a complete outsider. And then you can kind of slowly make your way into the group. And it was like a very, very nice process. And later on, they all sort of amalgamated into like one super meetup. And I think maybe it had to do with how meetup platform itself was, like they were charging a fairly considerable amount of money to host a meetup. So having like 10 different ones financially didn't really make any sense compared to having one big one that just does like theme events. But when that happened, the quantity of events kind of went down because people would meet like it was like a more rare thing. However, one positive note out of it is that out of that meetup, a whole Vancouver scene conference grew. So the Polyglot Unconference is like a Vancouver local conference, which was virtual for the pandemic times, but it's back to in person. I went to the last one. I think I mentioned before that it didn't have nearly as much attention or attendees as it used to have at its peak. But I think that these days, if you don't find an in-person community where you can share your ideas, I'm thinking that it's pretty easy to make one. Like there's no reason to wait. Just make one and invite some coworkers, get them to invite some coworkers, maybe invite people from your previous jobs. Just go for a beers at a pub and talk about tech, something can happen. So I think it's definitely worthwhile because you get to meet people who are very, well, not all of them, but some of them are going to be great. Like you would look at the person and be like, wow, that is impressive. Like the amount of stuff or this level of sophistication that they get to is, it's pretty inspiring. So I was inspired a lot of times when I was going there. So it's definitely a worthwhile thing. And I think it's lamentable that people are preferring to do things virtually now. It's not the same. In person is always better. And if there is one that's kind of sluggish, still go, invite somebody, see, get the lay of the land. Maybe it's languishing because it's just not being promoted enough or something. So, yeah, something can be done.
Yeah, actually, there is this guy on Twitter. His name is Kent. I think maybe he was part of the people who push like the React Remix. I don't know if you heard about this library. And it was from him that I actually started getting the inspiration to actually be part of a community. But what came to mind was like, I'm trying to find what would be the benefit of being part of it. I get it. I know the importance of community, right? But specifically in this industry, especially like let's say, what are the chances that when you go to a meetup or like you go to a conference, what are the chances that you actually get something from it? Because from my experience, I think most times when these kind of events are organized, mostly it's about a particular library, a particular framework, and you just like mostly like a marketing strategy to actually create awareness for a particular product. And while you can benefit from learning about this product, sometimes you come out of the conference, you go back to your house, you don't really feel like you've gained much from your day. It could be a little bit draining even if it's like some of the processes that will happen during the conference and all these things. So I'm just wondering like, what is exactly the benefit of these meetups, in reality, especially like conferences this time.
Right. So I think there's a distinction between, as you noted, some of them feel like marketing, and I think they are. I think that especially for libraries that came out of bigger companies, they have like the evangelists that go out and promote because they want you to be part of their ecosystem because Maybe they can offer you other things that they can charge you for. And it's fair. They release pretty good libraries. They want people to use them, and maybe they want to market some other opportunities. All perfectly good. And I think that those type of conferences you can normally identify pretty clearly. You kind of look at the platinum tier sponsor and the lineup, and you're like, ah, okay, well, this one is sponsored by Microsoft, therefore, they're gonna be pushing some of the stuff that they offer. And again, nothing wrong with that, because if you're interested in a particular library, you can learn something. I think that maybe on a bigger conferences, you might not have too many gold nuggets that you would extract out of it, but you're still gonna have some. Like if you go to a conference and you don't find anything in there, I would find it to be pretty strange. Like usually there should be at least one or two things that you would be like, huh, I never thought about that. That's interesting. I have to look into that. But the difference with meetups is the meetups were more, I don't know, more intimate, I should say. Because usually there's way fewer people attending those. Like a conference implies at least like a couple of hundred people are going to show up. Meetup could be like 30. And out of those 30, after the third meetup, you probably know like 20 of them, right? And so it is an opportunity to catch up with your acquaintances and colleagues and maybe friends. You make friends there too. And it's much more like when it's a more the closer it gets to like a one-on-one experience, the more information you're gonna get, and the quality is gonna be higher. But the big conferences are there's nothing particularly wrong with them either. You just have to pick them. And even in marketing conferences, I mean, obviously, big tracks are going to be reserved by the main sponsor that's going to be having a very particular conversations. But, satellite conversations can be pretty interesting too. And again, if you get to see people who you haven't seen in a while and catch up, it still gives you the sense of community. And yeah, I think overall it's pretty nice. So you have to pick the level of craziness. And I don't know how many people still do meetups. I know that the website still exists and there's communities and you can probably find something. I haven't done much out of it because again, like I really don't have a reason to go downtown, and these days I mostly don't even have a desire to go downtown. So it would be like something that I have to deliberately do. And maybe I should. In fact, maybe I'm missing out. And I guess the habit of doing it got interrupted. And with no good, not like a good reason to get back into it. It's more of a like, it kind of fell off and nothing prompted the rediscovery of that. So maybe this conversation will prompt a rediscovery of that to see what's out there and what's available and go back and say hello to people.
It'd be nice, because you see, like the way I feel is like for meetups, like you said, it's more intimate. So let's say there's like 10 of us at most, or thereabout. We can get together, you can control the conversation. You can, if you don't understand what's been talked about, you get the opportunity to actually like ask and you can learn. But in a conference, not like you can't learn, not like you won't gain anything. I mean, I attend a few NG cons, the some of this, especially the some of these conferences that are like webinars, because in at work we get to do that. But it's not, I don't think it's a waste of time. It's just, I think the knowledge you get from this, you don't really need to go to the conference to get it. So it's not like it's not very peculiar to the conference itself. So like I feel you probably even learn more if you go read up yourself. But my question for this about this is just like I'm curious about how these communities the role it plays in the career growth. Like as a for developer or software engineer or like anyone in tech, how these conferences can actually play a role in outside of like, oh, you met someone that knows someone, that has a link somewhere, which is like something very big in communities, but just generally,
Yeah.
what else?
Well, I mean, I have had two big jobs that I got, maybe more, two that I can think of that I got specifically through meetups. Because, you know, you if you are comfortable to sort of going up to the front and speaking and having a conversation and, you know, expressing your ideas, eventually you will be noticed. And I remember for one job, it was I believe both of them were at Vandev. There was a meetup, sort of just developer meetup, where it was like presentation for half an hour and then mixer in the second part so people can just chat about whatever. And in both cases, it was, oh, hey, I noticed that you said these things and they seem interesting, and you know, we have a position. Would you like to come interview with us? Because you seem like a knowledgeable guy. And both of these times, this process worked out and I ended up getting a job out of it. So, but I mean, there is that condition of you actually have to say something and say something that is of value. So if you just come in there and sit quietly in a corner, your luck will probably not going to be as great. And so in that sense, I'm very, very thankful for those opportunities and being there. And I don't know if it naturally comes to me because, you know, mo I'm mostly introverted, and I guess I would characterize it as I have no problem talking to people and communicating my ideas. It's just that I recharge away from people. And I think if you have some sort of perceived impediment where you're like afraid to talk to people or you're afraid to talk to the crowds, I think meetups can also be a great introduction because it's a very small audience. You know, like anybody can probably be okay talking with one person because, you know, if they bomb and do poorly, well, only one person kind of knows about their failure. I mean, nobody's expecting you to go in front of a 10,000 crowd and, you know, immediately, right? You kind of have to gradually build it up. And so, you know, meetups are great for that. You come in there, there's 10, 15 people, you know, you say hello to one or two of them, you maybe ask some questions, and you leave it at that. So it's like a very slow, gradual process if you're in that situation. If you're extroverted and have no problem talking to people, then, you know, do that. Just, you know, don't hog all of the attention. And I would say the big conferences, sure, because there's so many people there, you're not gonna stand out in any meaningful way unless you're one of the speakers on a stage. Like you're just there to listen to what the person on a stage is saying for most part. But there's one thing that I really enjoy about Vancouver's Polyglot Conference. I said it was the unconference because it follows the unconference format where, in the beginning of the day, people make a line and they go to the stage and they pitch ideas and topics for the things they want to talk about. And, you know, there is a facilitator who records all of these things. And then there's an app where people can vote about all of the topics that they are interested in. And then people just get breakout rooms and talk on a topic. So last year, I pitched three different topics myself and ended up having three separate breakouts, which also meant that I couldn't really attend any of the breakouts that I was interested in, but it was an interesting experience too. Maybe I got like a little bit too greedy. I should have pitched like one, or really like pick a really good one and have an opportunity to attend other ones. But, you know, it's still it's a very interesting format. And so I maybe, you know, a bunch of years back, I would not have thought that like, oh, I have anything worthwhile to say. I'll attend and I talk in the breakout, but I don't necessarily want to put myself out there that way. But then this year it was like, well, why not? You know, like One of the four rules of the format is that you vote with your feet, and if you're not interested in a conversation, you can just go and attend another one. And if everyone were to leave, then I'd also be free to attend something that I wanted to attend. So, there's like literally no losing in that scenario. So that was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward for the next year where maybe I'll be a little bit more cautious about overextending myself for pitching and just attend other sessions too.
Just while you were talking, I noticed some things. You mentioned the pitching thing, like people pitch their ideas and meetups, and I was wondering what the benefit of all this will be. So like maybe this is one benefit actually, aside from the fact that you can really network to position yourself for probably other jobs as well, which. But here comes the dilemma, right? In a meetup, you can do your networking in person, but there are also different ways to actually do the same thing online now, like social platforms like Twitter, X, as we call it now, and LinkedIn. For example, I know there is a particular feature on LinkedIn where you can find like conferences, like events, and I think you can also, I'm not too sure very well, but I think if you're like an organizer, you can see like the list of attendees and all these kind of things. And but also I know like even on Twitter now we have like spaces where people gather to talk and share their ideas and all these things. Now, here comes the dilemma, right? If you are, like you said, an introvert, that's you find it, which is a very common personality in the industry, and you find yourself in a condition where it's not your go-to thing to do to be social, to like want to high five everybody, greet everybody, or make an impression everywhere, And you can get to build a community like this. So, what is the difference between these two ideas of community building, like in person or online? Because it looks they're pretty both solid. They're both pretty solid if you really put it on the table. For example, if you're looking for like a new position, you can position yourself on LinkedIn. Not necessarily even LinkedIn now, like even different other platforms. But LinkedIn, that's the job of LinkedIn, right? And if you're looking for like, just people to share ideas with, like I mentioned, the spaces. And there is also Clubhouse. You know Clubhouse, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So like there is also this kind of social media platforms now. So what do you suggest would be like the difference between the two, and which one would you be recommending?
That is a good question. I think for, well, I mean, social media versus in person, it's like a whole discussion. And I think we touched on parts of it in our previous conversations that I still prefer the real thing in a sense. I mean, virtual is nice. I mean, okay, like we're separated by thousands of kilometers of distance. So as much as we'd like, right now it's really difficult for us to do this in person. So we have to resolve it through digital means. But even this, because we both are on camera and we're just talking one person to another, it's like as close as it gets. I think it's valid that the online is like viable in its own way. But I don't know, it's kind of hard to predict where everything is going. Like, are we heading down the more dystopian future where you live in your pod and you communicate exclusively through a social network and like you never see anybody face to face? I would dread that. And I still think that in person beats everything else. There's just so many things that don't necessarily translate too well over our current communication mediums. The other thing, okay, like you have Clubhouse, which from my understanding is like a group chat where a person can sort of present and everybody listens and they can communicate in real time, roughly. Is that correct?
Yeah, but not just one person. Everybody can have their opinion.
Okay,
You
yeah.
know,
So it's
you
like
can get a mic.
it's kind of a bigger version of what we're doing with more people. But everybody's been on a Zoom call with a lot of people on it. In fact, there's this really amusing website called conferencecall.biz, I believe, and it's dystopia. It's complete dystopia. Just go to it. It's pretty fun. I'm not gonna spoil what it is. But even organizationally, online sucks. Like if two people start talking at the same time, nobody can hear anything. Right? Even the two of us, when we happen to overlap, like I can't hear what you're saying, you can't hear what I'm saying. It doesn't work the same way. And even the fact that when I'm recording it, I'm recording our voices onto separate tracks, so technically I can do some mixing later on and adjust the levels and like make it a little bit more audible. If it doesn't work with two people, how can you expect it to work with 30 plus? Latency, lag, people have different microphones. If somebody has some crazy amount of background noise or like, man, it's just not the same. I mean, if that's the only option that you have, go for it. There's nothing wrong with it. I just prefer the real thing better. And I think we are social creatures and we need social. As much as an introvert that you are, I would highly doubt that, if you take a whole bunch of introverts, like the hardcore type, and you put them on a deserted island, after a year, they'll be like, man, I really wish to talk to some people. Most of them would say that. I don't believe that there's people that are that introverted that if you put them on a deserted island, they'd be like, yeah, this is what I've been dreaming of. Maybe for the next couple of weeks, but I think without human contact, you'll go nuts. And the real thing is still the real thing. So, I think in terms of organizing it, okay, so like I never had I had an opportunity to organize some meetups with varying degrees of success. They were like very, very small. A couple of people showed up a couple of times. And it's with any community, it takes a lot of effort to maintain it. Like you actually proactively have to corral people and get them to show up, which is really hard. When I was attending a lot of meetups and hosted some meetups, usually even after Meetup removed the maybe button, because originally on Meetup there was a maybe button where it's like, are you gonna show up? Maybe. And everybody answers maybe, maybe, and nobody shows up. So they got rid of that button, so it was yes and no. And if 50% of people who say yes show up, it's actually a good outcome. Because it's hard to get people to show up. Maybe in that sense, conferences work better because once they buy tickets, they like spend money on it, so now they kind of have to go. But if it's this non-committal thing that they can easily flake out on, most people will definitely flake out on it. You have to be kind of into it for it to work. So if you're organizing this community, it's difficult. And so in the beginning, I would probably suggest maybe just like go to Meetup, go to your city and do like hashtag programming or dev or something and just see what's there and like sign up to all of them. Who cares? Show up to a couple, see what you like. Because if you try hosting one, well, hosting one is also hard because you need space. So, like for the Meetup that I was hosting, I could host it out of the common room in my building. And it was, a little bit away from transportation. Like it was annoying to tell people how to get there. I had to book the room. So for a lot of the meetups that I was attending, usually they were run by companies and the company would be providing a conference room. Maybe they have some soft drinks or like a beer tap or something. So it's like you need to have these other incentives because every meetup that had a beer tap in someone's office was a success because, hey, there's beer, so people would show up just for that and then have a conversation on top of that. And And also, I'm kind of jumping all over the place because I'm recalling these experiences from some time ago. But I remember we had one meetup, which was the DevOps meetup, sort of at the peak of DevOps becoming a thing because it was totally hijacked by being this completely different thing. And we had like four or five or six meetups when we talked about like all of the things, you know, like Puppet and Chef and Ansible and HashiCorp tools and all of that stuff. And then eventually it kind of felt like we basically talked about everything and the meetup sort of stopped because we talked about everything. I was like, not really that much to talk about. So sometimes these things kind of peter out and, you know, that happens too. So I think maybe in that sense, having a more broad meetup that does not tie itself to some particular library or some particular stack has a higher chance at longevity. But at the same time, if it's a broader topic thing, like if before, like we had an Erlang meetup. So everybody who shows up is interested in Erlang. And then we had a Haskell meetup, and everybody who's interested in Haskell goes to that meetup. So people who are there all the time are there because they're interested in a thing. But when it got aggregated under the same umbrella, people will not show up to events because they are on subjects that they're not as interested in. So even though, like, I don't know, like 500 people are members of the meetup community, like 20 or 30 of them show up at any given time because the topic they're interested in is not going to happen for like another month or something. So it's like a very interesting balancing act. And you know, we talked a little bit about organizational side and about attending side. Overall, I think it's worthwhile. If you have the resources and capacity to try organizing one, I think you should do it because it's just an interesting experience. You learn a little bit of things. I imagine organizing a conference is even a more interesting experience, but I never had a chance to do that, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, actually, I agree with you. Like, for most, a lot of the things, for example, like the microphones not being on the same quality as everybody. So, like, maybe it's difficult. There may be some technical issues for different people to say something. But you see, that's one side of it. Another side of it is like, having a meetup, first of all, you mentioned beer. I don't think you'll be drinking beer and really be coherent about your thoughts about programming. That's more like a hangout. But in a setting where you are actually being intentional to share knowledge, I think everybody would want to come with like good setup. This is my opinion, you know, as well. As actually, I gotta be honest here. Like, I'm a bit biased towards like online platform because this is what's comfortable for me, and at the moment. But I also want to stretch myself to actually get into like in-person communities and actually get to see. So I want to do both, right? And this is the plan that I'm making for myself. However, like, I also know like sometimes you go to meetups and you realize that the people who actually have the loudest voice in the meetings don't necessarily know that much about what we're talking about. And because there's like different people, different personalities, you know, it's also possible for you to meet someone who probably might just want to, you know, be a little less professional in the meeting. And then it makes you question yourself, like, do you want to continue doing this? So you feel like you don't want to quit, but at the same time, you're not really like comfortable. It's like you're going to like a training where like you probably don't like your team member or you probably don't like your coach, but you just have to show up every day. And it could become tedious. Even the fact that you have to commute to the place to have all this type of feeling, it's already too much work. So at least like if it's an online community, you don't feel very comfortable in this community where there is no commitment. You can switch community, move to another one that fits your needs. And that I know you can also do the same with like in-person meetings, but I'm just not sure like this is enough reason. But I think at the end of the day, like you mentioned, I think it's like preference. But personally, for me, I'm wondering, like, I'm not sure if one outweighs the other. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be about like which one works best. What do you think? No?
I would agree. Like, you gotta do what's best for you, but there is something about facing the things that make you uncomfortable. You know, we chatted briefly about it, sort of outside of the recording, I remember.
Yeah.
But the whole idea that, if like what, like why, and I'm not putting you on a spot. It's more of a general question. Like, if going to an in-person meeting makes you uncomfortable, you probably would want to know why.
I can
Right?
tell you why.
Right, okay.
For me, if it's not a rhetorical question, I can give you a few reasons why I can get uncomfortable. Why I can get uncomfortable. Say, first question, first reason. Let's say, you had the mindset like, oh, you were supposed to talk about something. Let's say we were supposed to talk about performance in Angular, for example, and there is like 10 of us there, so, you get to the meetup. And someone decides to start talking about performance in Angular, which is the topic of the day. And then someone who has a larger personality decides to compare Angular with React. It's not like it's off topic completely, but that's not what we're talking about. And just because you have more knowledge in React, then you decide to hijack the topic and go on and say, I'm not upset. It's just like, I'm uncomfortable now. This is not what I plan to do, you know? Or someone decides to do just, you know, as social beings as we are, like as much as we are social beings, I still think like there are some boundaries, like there are some cultural behaviors that we need, that people need to learn in social settings just to make everyone comfortable. I sometimes this social needs are not being considered. Sometimes, anyway, I'm just really trying to make light here, but you know, there are many reasons why one can feel uncomfortable in a social environment. There are many reasons,
Right.
but yeah, that's just one of it.
Okay. Well, let me offer you a counterpoint to that. I mean, well, first of all, situations like that are going to happen in all areas of your life. And if you say, and again, I'm not putting you specifically on a spot. This is more of a like observation on a situation. If a person says, "Well, when we don't talk on the topic that we set out to talk to, that makes me uncomfortable and I don't want to be there anymore." In life, there's going to be a lot of situations where this type of thing happens. And by saying that you don't want to be there anymore, in this particular case, you're effectively saying that you don't want to be there anymore in most of the cases. So, like, which case is important enough for you to do something about it? And is it not a perfect opportunity to train to become a good facilitator and to steer the conversation toward the topic that it was supposed to be on, and to do it in a manner where you're not just being a dictator and like yelling at people and telling them how to live their life, and instead you would say, "You know, everybody, merit, we can leave the merits, the discussion on merits of React versus Angular to the other day, but now the focus on the conversation is more about performance. So maybe let's, you know, go back to that, right?" And if you do that, well, first of all, you're taking responsibility in some degree of being the facilitator of the group. That already gives you bonus points, right? Because people can now see that, you know, you take on leadership role, you're exhibiting leadership qualities. That's a good thing, right? Like if someone's out there is looking for someone who has those qualities, you'd be like, that guy, right? He's got something. And that also trains you to apply these patterns in other areas of your life because you have to be able to defend your interests in a way that are not Like, by not being an asshole, pardon my speech here, like, you have to find diplomatic ways of resolving these things. Because maybe in this case, it's only for your benefit, but like, if the official topic of the conversation is Angular performance and people are hijacking it left and right, by steering it toward that goal, it's a benefit to everybody else who maybe feels the same way and doesn't have enough resolve to speak up. So, overall, a good thing, right? So it's, and again, it's a community that is more or less ephemeral. And, you know, if you decide that like you can't do anything with all of your efforts, there's still chaos, you can leave. And, you know, you had a chance to participate, you had a chance to facilitate, you know, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but at least you tried, right? So next time we're in your situation, and the thing is, those types of things are skills that you have to develop, and this gives you an opportunity to try to develop them, because even like in your company, you may have somebody on your team who can do the same sort of thing in the things where it actually really matters, and they will like try hijacking the conversation and like doing all of those other things, and you have to deal with it, right? Especially as you start going through the ranks, as you're like growing to more senior ranks, like one of your job is to resolve these types of conflicts. So if you can get some experience in doing that for free elsewhere, I think that's a good thing, right? And I'm pretty sure that other reasons why you might dislike going to in-person events, and those same things can happen regardless if it's an in-person event or if it's like a virtual event. I'm pretty sure you can flip it and see a way of how can I turn the situation to my benefit? You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I just learned? I just learned that from what you were saying now, like the chaos is the opportunity to actually showcase yourself. Like
It's like, how do you deal? How do you deal with chaos? How do you, how willing are you to take the responsibility of converting that chaos into something productive?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Thank you, Vasily. Yeah. But also, now that we've gotten to this point now, so like, how do you suggest to choose conference? How do you determine which conference? Because I know, like we said in earlier, a lot of them are actually just like marketing events, and also like, you know, you can find some things on Meetup to actually attend in person, and like I said, some of the events on like LinkedIn and all, but how do you determine which one is good to go to? Like, how do you choose your conference or meetups?
So, in the beginning, it was basically random. I just had this analogy in my head of, you know, how, you know, you put the stickies on a wall and then you throw darts and see where they land. In my case, it wasn't darts. It was just like a shotgun blast that covered pretty much all the stickies at once. And I just went to all of them. I went to all of them because, you know, I was spending a lot of time downtown after work. I had free time. I could, like, if there was one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday, like, hell, I'll go to all of them. Why not? And maybe I was lucky in the ways that the quality of all of them was good, and I mostly stuck around with all of them. Like, you can't necessarily make a first impression your sort of final impression. Like, if you go to some event and it doesn't really work out that well, it could have been just that one time. Like, if you go there two or three times and it's crappy consistently, then maybe it's just a crappy community and you don't go there anymore. And these days, mostly attending meetups is usually free. And if they charge some nominal fees, like a couple of dollars maybe to cover like some costs, it's not that much. So, and I guess maybe you need to understand what the goal of you being there. Like, do you want to learn about stuff? Do you want to meet new people? Do you want to present yourself? Maybe there's opportunity to do all of those things. And yeah, I don't know. The bigger conferences, like the fancy ones, like I don't know, like Amazon conference or something. Like the reInvent or whatever, like Usually, you have to convince your company to send you there. And then, because they're sending you there and they're paying for all expenses, why wouldn't you go, right? Even if it sucks, you still get to go to Vegas, you know, and enjoy the proceedings, the food, and everything. Although, I have to say, I went to reInvent a bunch of years back. My company sent me, I think it was in 2017. It was pretty tough because, you know, the talk started at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then they go pretty much for the whole day with the lunch break. So by the end of the day, you're like, oh my God, I'm pretty exhausted. So bigger conferences, they're like more exhausting for sure. But you know, it was an experience too. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm not quite sure where I was going with this. Oh yeah, picking the ones that to go to. If you have an opportunity and it's only an investment of a couple of hours of your time, just go to all of them that you have in your area and find what sticks, and maybe you'll find one that really sticks for you. I remember one of the conferences that I went to, it was also kind of completely random, but it was back in my excessive Kickstarter days, when I spent a lot of money on various Kickstarters. And then one of the Kickstarters was for the organization of Vancouver B-Sides Security Conference, which was, I believe, the second one. I think they did the first one in like a very, very small group somewhere, and then the second one they were trying to take make it bigger. And like I think B-Sides overall, it's like this organization that is worldwide, and then they have like local conferences in different cities, and Vancouver happens to be one of them. And so I'm like, I'll put $100 down to make it happen, even though I don't necessarily do security, but it was like, well, people are trying to do something cool and like I get tickets and some swag out of it, so why the hell not? And you know, I've been going to B-Sides pretty much every year since, even though it's not entirely my wheelhouse. It's a lot of fun, so you never know.
That's just on one side. I think like that's if you are having trouble deciding. So for example, like when you go through the list on meetups, you can see like, oh, there is Python for programming, there is Python for this, there is Angular for that, whatever. They have the entire list, right? But how do you? I don't think you just go to meetups just because you want to make the numbers or like you want to just be everywhere. I would think like there will be some form of strategy to like find the one that actually would be give some type of benefit to you. You don't just go to the gym because it makes the gym look good. You go to the gym because you want to do certain type of training. I believe this is what I'm thinking. So now I'm wondering, like,
Right.
how do you specifically tailor your community, the community you're looking for, to your to best suit your ambitions in tech,
That is a good question. I think, well, one thing I was going to say is that, you know, in order to be at the gym, you first have to go to the gym, right?
Yeah, true.
And even like, you have to, like, you don't even know what's gonna await you there. So, how can you say, like, of course, you don't necessarily see the value of going from the outset. You don't know the people, you don't know their skill, you don't know what they're gonna be talking about. And I think that's the beauty of it, is like, once you find out, now you have a choice to make of whether you want to stick around with it or not. But if you never go because, like, oh, well, I don't know if this is going to be useful to me, maybe it will, maybe it won't, but there's only one way to find out, right? I mean, if you have somebody who went to something and they say, oh, it's great, you should go, yeah, maybe take their recommendation. But overall, question of how do I pick my community? And specifically, you mentioned like that it's tailored to your ambition. I think that's a really good question. I think you have to have people around you that can serve as an inspiration to what you're doing. right? And like through the meetups, I met some people who are on the next level compared to where I am, maybe the next couple of levels even. And I wouldn't necessarily say that we're friends, we may be more like acquaintances. But still, I remember one time I was working on some project at work that was like to do with like machine learning and things like that. And I'm of like a very beginner in terms of like actual implementation for these things. And so I remembered that there's this one guy from meetups who's like really smart about all of that kind of stuff. And I just sent him a message and be like, hey, dude, I'm like doing this, all this machine learning things. Like, where do I even start? And then we met at a coffee shop and we sat down for like an hour and a half. And he just like did an info dump on me. And I was just like, oh my God. So once you have those people and once you're visible and present and known to some degree, if you then need to call on them for something, you can reach out and they'll be less likely to reject you because you have that common ground. It's like, oh, we go to the same meetup, we chat there. Like, it's not just some rando asking me things. It's one of the guys from the meetup on the things that we're interested in, and you know, maybe I can help him out. So even that, like just making those types of connection is worthwhile, but you're never gonna know until you're there.
That's true. I agree. But how do you then find these people? Because I would say, for example, to find someone like this, I don't think you will find them just like,
I did.
I mean, like, or just like, I mean, that's just one out of like 1 million. For example, like, you can, these type of people also want to socialize with other people, probably like them. Or like someone that they can also get some benefits from. It's not very common. Like, for example, I don't know, in tech, in our industry, this is from my own view, my opinion, right? It's not very common for people who are like really high level, like in the next level, to want to always have like relationship with people who are probably like at the probably like lesser level to them because you don't speak about the same thing. For example, you might be your struggle might be to understand a particular stack or something. They're talking about systems, yeah. They're talking about how bigger things work, So like the conversation is not the same. So like to find this type of people is really like a it's a really big rare gem, like if you get to find one, it's good, but it's not really common and easy to find. But
I think your personal bias shows in here because when I was approaching this situation, and it's not like I was consciously approaching the situation. It's just in general, I like to share what I know with people, especially with people who don't know it and are interested in learning it. That's the most exciting part. Finding someone who wants to learn something from you, that's awesome. And you say, oh, people don't want to do that. But I guess the fact that I personally want to do that shapes my outlook on other people. And you know how a lot of people think that everybody thinks like them, right? And they're very surprised to discover that that's not usually the case. But in this case, I think like I like teaching people things that might be useful to them, and therefore other people also like teaching people things. So when you reach out to that person, why wouldn't he be happy to teach you something you don't know and they do? So I think it's just a way of framing and perspective. I was approaching it from a position of course they'll be happy to help me out, because why wouldn't they? Because I do the same thing, right? So I wouldn't necessarily generalize and say that everybody wants to help people or everybody doesn't want to help people. It's more of a, again, if you don't try, like this attitude prevents you from even trying because you immediately say, well, why would they help me? They're not interested. They're talking about here and I'm like here, so obviously they're not interested. That's not necessarily true. They could have that desire to, take somebody and mentor or whatever. So again, you got to try it out. And in terms of like, how do you find people like that? They're the people who are talking. You know, it's easy. You can hear that they are on the next level, and then you know that's the person on the next level, and maybe I can ask them things, and maybe they'll even tell me something in return.
That's true. Like, there are people, see, I'm not saying that they don't want to help. You see, I don't think that the issue is they don't want to help. I think the issue is just, I find that sometimes because, and I'm saying this just because of my own personal experience, you know, and which can be different for everybody. But for me, I noticed like there were times in my There have been times like even up till now, I'm always like actively looking to find people who are like way more ex just like the way I benefit a lot from talking to you. I also look to find like, you know, to talk if any opportunity I get, I look meet someone who has been working for 20, 25 years, 50 years, like I say 50, but hopefully not. But you know, like with a lot of experience, I always want to learn from these people, yeah. But I have found that in my conversation with these people, I can see there are some things that I've learned. And one of them is that sometimes it's not like they don't want to help. It's just like they probably don't even know how to one. Also, they also find it difficult to communicate some of their ideas. The difference between you want to actually help someone. And now, how to really help this person becomes a job to a chore because you're not really sure on how to really help. And what is help really? Like, what kind of help would they really give? Like, is you have to know what you want to learn from them. That's another thing. You need to know what you. I don't think, like, so far, like in my experience, I don't think like it's not very common to find someone who will say like, oh, I think you need to learn this, or like as a even like I don't. It's not common, so they don't come to you to tell you what you need. You go to them to ask for what you need, really. And sometimes there is this gap between like the levels, and it's not everybody that has the skill or like the ability to actually like. Close that gap and make you feel comfortable. And for example, I was in a clubhouse meeting one time, and there was this guy. He came on the stage and he was talking about how like, oh, engineers these days have it easy. Engineers these days have it so easy. They don't even know like how easy it is for them. Back in my days, we used to use punch cards. I'm like, bruh, I'm not trying to compare struggles with you. Like, I'm not trying to compare struggles with you here. Like, okay, but we don't do this anymore. Like, how about we talk about what we do now and what you do currently, you know? I share your experience now. But it's pretty common for people who have all these like many years to want to tell you how things happened many years ago, which has nothing to do with how you live your life now. So there's always that gap, and that's where the issue is.
Yeah, that's fair. I think there's a couple of things that I sort of want to address. I mean, in even in our conversations pre-podcast, you know, a lot of them are, at least from my part, are in the form of back in my day, you know? Because I think one of the things is I think we briefly covered it in one of our previous conversations. It's like they had a chance to forget more about stuff that some people are learning now. And because that stuff is not part of the picture anymore, you say, oh, how it has no relation on our day-to-day life, right? But their struggle did shape your starting point, right? Like they had to go through the grime and the dirt to arrive at a point where you just start off and it's like nice and clean and shiny, and you get to ignore all of that stuff. And I think a lot of people might feel slight resentment for people like not appreciating like what it took. And I think that it is not constructive in a sense that if they're approaching it from a place of resentment, it's like, oh man, these damn youngsters back in my day, we had to do punch cards and they have no appreciation for that. It's like, yeah, they don't have any appreciation for that because why would they? And even if they did, like I'm not really sure where I'm going with this. I think the both sides are kind of valid because if you haven't known the struggle, in comparison to what they had to go through, your thing could feel minuscule, and it feels like you're bitching for no good reason because they had to overcome mountain this tall to get say someplace, and you have to overcome a molehill this big to get somewhere. And in comparison, it feels like, well, how dare they to even bitch about that stuff because we had to do, X and Y. And it's not just in programming, it's just everywhere. It's the con generational conflict. So you can't necessarily be mad at them for it. And once you have your 20, 25 years in the industry, you'll be doing the same thing. I can guarantee it. Just like 100%, we can bet on it.
So who knows? Maybe, actually, maybe.
And then the second thing was, okay, as you've identified, the gap could be very big and there's like levels within it. So again, maybe you can flip it and say, okay, I understand that I'm not even remotely near the level where what you're teaching me can be useful, but what avenues should I explore to upgrade myself, not to here right away, but at least to here so that the gap is smaller? And maybe they can suggest something there too. And it's true, not everybody has a talent for conveying what they know in a digestible format. I think it's also a skill that you have to practice, and not very many people practice it. You gotta try. You gotta try.
Yeah, I agree. You get a try. And I personally I find it one of the easiest form of gaining knowledge is talking to people who have done exactly what you're trying to do, and even more so that they know where the bump will be, they know what to expect. So and learning as a developer from like more experienced people is not, it's not about like, I think the least thing you can stress about is talking about codes, really. I think that's the like the least of the issues that I guess different people have different concerns, but in my opinion, I think talking about codes might just be the least of all the issues. So I think there's a lot to gain from talking to with people who have more experience. I mean, this is a good one example here. There's a lot to gain from talking with people who have like more experience. But I think that there should be a plan to go to benefit from it, really. This is me now doing a reflection of like what can be done to be better at using these opportunities. Probably making a plan of what you really want to learn from them, because I have noticed like sometimes you can start talking about something, maybe for you just like bring up a topic and you just like having a casual conversation with them, hoping to slowly get into like the big things that you really want to learn, but they cannot really relate. And it's not like they don't want to relate. Maybe they've been through this stage like 15 years ago and they're like wondering like, oh, people do that, like this is how you do it now. And to them, this is even like learning again for them. So like they're not really sure what you're talking about. Everybody has like their own experience, but I just think like maybe it would be helpful to be sure of what you want to learn from someone before you actually like walk up to them, especially in a conference settings, you know, because also some people ask questions just for attention. Not necessarily attention, just like
Just to flex.
to, yeah, you know, like you want to ask the toughest question to the speaker to make the person confused, you know, just to gain some, like, you know, I'm looking for that word, you know, the word where like just people see you like, you know, the smartest guy.
Validation.
Exactly, you know, like, you know, this kind of thing. I don't know if that's very beneficial. I guess like it makes people notice you, but I don't know how much that benefits anyone, really.
Yeah. It's the same people who do that in the interviews that we talked about before.
Yeah.
So, okay, I think that it is valid that it pays off to be prepared. I think it really is determined by your time frame. Like if you want quick, immediate answers, you better have very, very specific and very pointed questions. And you know they say that, you know, a correctly formulated question contains 70% of the answer within it. So like as you are coming up with your questions, you gain understanding of the gaps and like it will definitely shape you. But in our personal relationship, I mean, I remember what your plan was. When we talked
Oh no.
for the very,
Oh
very first time, I don't know, should I talk about it?
no. Maybe in another episode. But anyway, go on.
Well, when we talked for the first time, you know, you didn't know who I was. I didn't know who you were. We got connected. And I said, well, what do you hope to get out of this? And you said, I want to be a CTO. And I said, okay, that's a very worthwhile goal. And that was the extent of the plan. It was like a single bullet point. I want to be a CTO.
Yeah, it's a
And
go.
it's a goal. Maybe it was very low resolution. Because as we started talking, we started talking about, well, what does it actually encompass in itself, right? And sort of identifying, first of all, you have to figure out where you are. Like, in order to figure out where you want to be, you have to figure out where you are. And over this 2.5 year time span, I think we're slowly getting closer to that eventual goal. I don't know, maybe we started doing all these weird tangents along the way, and maybe even in that time frame, you understood that maybe it's too early to set this goal in particular right now, and we've readjusted. And if you only have 15 minutes of someone's time, obviously you want to have a completely different type of question, right? That you can actually get
Yeah.
something concrete, right? So, yeah, if you choose your timeline correctly, you can tailor your approach as well.
Yeah, true. So for example, like that's true actually, very accurate. And I think for me, I still have this ambition, for sure. It's just now I know more about how to get there. See, like I think this is also a very common thing amongst like developers or like maybe people who have the same mindset like me. We get really pressed about our ambitions and we want it to happen tomorrow. But there is a process for everything, you know. There are processes, there are things that you have to do to get to the goal. You can't jump milestones. You have to put in the work. And I think yes, like you said, I was younger then, but now I think I have more understanding of the process. And yeah, this is another thing. It's good to talk to someone because if like a path didn't cross at that time, I'll probably maybe it would be a different feeling for me right now. Or who knows, maybe the burnout would probably like, you know, make you think of something else because you're really pressed for a certain thing, but you don't really know how to get there. You're just like, this is what you want. You are going there and you would do everything, even if it involves you staying awake for 18 hours and not getting enough sleep at night. Just get there, you know. And this was my approach then. And but now as you continue to develop and mature as a developer, as an engineer, your planning changes. And this is one thing that can be really helpful, you know, talking to people who have been where you are right now and they know how things happen. I think this was one of the biggest thing like that I gained from our conversations back then. It helped me to make better plans, and my plans are better now. It's not, I didn't want to just like, it wasn't about the title, because taking for example becoming a CTO, you don't, you can get become a CTO, you know, let's say you work 4 years for sure, but it depends what type of CTO do you want to be, you know, like it depends on the type that you want to be, the level you want to be, like the quality and the experience you want to bring to this position as well. So yeah, so you see like now I know what I want, I know the plan to get there, and yeah, it's still work in progress. I mean,
Yeah, I think now you probably narrowed it down more to in terms of what you want. 'Cause we're going from a very low resolution to very high resolution, and as you increase resolution, like all of these different things start to pop up and branch out, right? And you have to address all of them. So in aggregate, you kind of have this idea. And then a couple of things that I was thinking about what you said. I remember in the very beginning, I think I was voicing this concept of there are no shortcuts pretty often, right? And you mentioned something about impatience. It's like we want it tomorrow. And I was saying like it is unlikely you're going to achieve it tomorrow because there are no such shortcuts. And the other thing too, like I had this again, this visual metaphor in my head is like imagine that you're in a labyrinth. And you know the direction toward, like, you know that if you go north, you will reach your goal, but the labyrinth is not a straight line to, it's like all of these things. And it's just this brick walls. And I thought, like, given a sturdy enough forehead and enough time, you can probably just keep going north, bumping through the walls, just knocking them down, going toward your direction. But if you have someone who can say, oh, don't try to bump through the wall, just go left and then right and then left and then right, you're still going to be moving toward your direction, except your forehead is going to be in a much nicer condition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you have
And
to put it.
yeah. And then the other thing, I was listening to this podcast. I mentioned it before we started recording. It was a Modern Wisdom podcast with Alex Hormozi. And he mentioned one thing that I thought was pretty interesting. He said that, again, patience. I probably won't be able to phrase it exactly because I just listened to it like yesterday. It hasn't fully settled in my head. I probably have to revisit it, and I'll link it somewhere here because I think it's really worthwhile. But the theme was that patience is the ability to do something else while you're waiting for your other goal to materialize. And given long enough timeline, you can achieve anything. And combining these two things together, it's like, okay, you will not be a CTO tomorrow, but you may be CTO in 5 years. Now you have to occupy yourself for these 5 years with other worthwhile pursuits that are bringing you to your goal. But at the same time, you're turning it like that impatient feeling that you get. It's like, oh, I'm not getting everything I want right now. It's like, yeah, but you will get there eventually. Meanwhile, occupy your time with something worthwhile as you're getting there, and then everything's going to work out. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And this type of mindset comes with maturity too, you know, like you know, as you get to develop, as you get to feel more matured in the role,
It's
then yeah.
kind of funny because they've completely debunked the marshmallow test recently.
What is that? What is that?
It was like this like psychology test where they took a whole bunch of kids and they put a marshmallow in front of them and said, I'm going to leave the room and I'm going to be back in a couple of minutes. And If you don't eat this marshmallow, you're gonna get two marshmallows. And then they like tape the kids and they like try to not eat it. And they said basically people, kid, they followed it up later and said, like, oh, the kids who didn't eat the marshmallow, like they were able to delay that gratification, did better in life. And for the longest time, it's like, okay, if you delay gratification, you'll do better in life. But apparently it had more to do with their socioeconomic background than actually like, you know, kids who had access to more stuff were able to delay gratification easier because I think they had more certainty in the outcome. And kids with like less privileged backgrounds, because they had no certainty of outcome, because for most of the time, things don't materialize. So better get something now while it's in front of you. So I don't know where I was going with this, but I guess we're talking about like the whole concept of, I think delaying gratification and ability to do that is still very valid. But that particular piece of research doesn't necessarily bear it out, so I guess we'll have to find something new.
Yeah, I have a question for you. It just came right now as we're talking, you know? I'm curious, like, did you ever, like, at any point in your career, have this, like, ambition of, I want this, and you walk towards this goal? Did you ever make this kind of goal for yourself? Like, oh, I want to do this, and how did you get to the goal? I'm curious. Did you ever have this type of ambition?
I think I'm only now starting to get to mental framing to do that. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, but for most of my career, it was very organic growth. And I think that probably prevented me from reaching new heights, so to speak. And I don't know necessarily what that was essentially mediated on. Actually, like one of the things that they talked also in this podcast was that, you know, the discomfort threshold was not, he was saying like for people in some situation where they're like in some situation that they dislike, it would be much better for them if their situation was worse because then they would have the impetus to do something about it. But you're sort of stuck in this complacency zone where it's kind of crappy, but it's not that crappy. You can kind of find some positive aspects and justify remaining there. But if your situation was way shittier, you'd be like, man, this sucks. I have to do something about it. And then you would. And so I think for most of my career, it was more of the former, where it's like, yeah, the pay is not great, but you know, I get to sleep in and I have all of these freedoms and blah, 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 blah. So I guess I'll stick around. And yeah, it sucks. Because if I didn't have that mindset, I'd be in an entirely different place right now. But I think that is slowly changing. It sucks that I had to learn it by the time I'm like in my 40s, but it's better than not learning it at all. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and now with all the experience you've gathered like across like your career so far, how do you think you would approach this type of goal? Like if you set a goal for yourself, I don't know how to make a good example with this. Like if you make a goal now, a career goal now, how would you keep yourself motivated to keep working towards that goal? Because it's not, I think everybody have like a goal, something they would like. But the thing is, the difference is like some people are able to stay focused on this goal and keep working on it for longer time than others. For you, how would you keep yourself motivated?
I would have to bring up probably another talk that I heard some time ago, and I think I mentioned it before, and I mentioned the whole concept before. That was like 12 questions about running a game studio by Rami Ismail, where he said discipline beats inspiration always. Like if you need external factors, like okay, you can have external factors to be motivated, And you can be motivated by the outcomes, by the positive outcomes. But what works especially well if you have not only the vision of positive outcomes, but you also have the vision of negative outcomes. It's like not only have to have something to be running toward, you also have something to be running from. And these two together work much better than just one. Like if you imagine your life, like if your life went completely to shit, and I don't know, you can imagine your personal hell for yourself, whatever that may be. Maybe, you start being lazy, abusing alcohol and smoking weed and playing video games all day, and now you imagine that and you're like 80 years old. Like that's a pretty sad picture. And maybe you can imagine the positive outcomes that, you're a CTO of a very successful company with, seven-figure paycheck and a personal yacht and a helicopter. And combine those two things together.
Is it you?
I don't know if CTOs make that much money. But anyway, the point is not just what's in front of you, but also the vision of what could be, what could be really bad about it if you don't do it. And the other thing too is, like everything has opportunity costs. Like not doing something in favor of something else, you have to make those choices. And yet again, another thing from that podcast. That was a really excellent podcast. It's really kind of how it brought a lot of ideas that I have to reflect on. But it was like, you will always have regrets. Because our entire existence is set up in a way where you have to make choices and you're gonna pick one over the other and you're gonna have regrets. So it's not even about making the choices in itself, it's more of a like making a choice as such that you can live with the regret of not making the other choice going forward. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But just to confirm, so what you're suggesting is like it's not more about like motivating you. When I said motivating yourself, I'm not saying like, oh, just making yourself feel good. Because, and if you have to wait for something for 5 years, for example, 5 years is not 5 hours. It's not 5 days even. It's a
It's not
long time.
50 years either.
It's a long time, and waking up every day, good example. Waking up every day to go to work. You go to work. Some days you want to stay in. You want to just enjoy more sleep. Some days you're like, you know what? I'd rather even just have someone give me money and just let me live my life. Or some days you're really just like happy to be there, like, yo, this is the best thing ever. It could happen like different days, different moments, And it's the same thing with when you set goals. Some days you want to like go at it. And I know sometimes motivational speakers say, like, just keep going. They just tell you, like, oh, hit the whatever, hit
Hit the
the
gym.
gym or whatever, just keep going, don't give up, don't, but nobody really tells you like relatable, events like, okay, some days you can feel like this, and when it does feel like this, how do you get yourself on the, to move back up and continue working? Or like on days, for example, you might even be sharing your goal with someone, and then they tell you like, oh, you're crazy, but or like they tell you stuff like, oh, it's never gonna happen, or like, but you believe in it, and you want to continue to do it. How do you, like, so far in your experience now, how would you handle this type of situation so you don't lose track of like your vision
Yeah, that's a
for
good
yourself?
question. That's a good question. I think you should go and see that other podcast because they go into it way more deep. And if I just paraphrase what they said poorly, it's gonna be not as good of a quality because I'm only there in the very early stages of that mindset myself. And I think a lot of it is framing. And there was another funny thing that he was saying that it's like the naysayers are right 99% of the time, except that one time when they're wrong and you succeed. And so 99% of the time when they say this is not going to work out, they're likely going to be right. So They are very, they're like always right except when it matters. So who cares? You don't have to listen to that. Like if you have your vision of the future and you have the path clear in your mind and go for it. And people who say no, well, who cares? I mean,
Yeah.
they'll have the benefit of saying I told you so, but that's about it. But then if you win, they have nothing to say then.
But this is something I learned also about what you mentioned, that the naysayers. The thing is, it depends. The way the mind works, the way the mind conceives like vision and like pictures. If someone tells you no, because you also have the doubt in your own mind, it is easier to believe the no than the yes. Because if someone says it's not possible, then at least you can rest now. And then you don't have to struggle to keep up the work that you need to get there,
But
because someone already said no,
that's a shortcut, and as we know,
So
there's no shortcuts.
exactly. So like it depends. Like I think at the end of the day, it's more like mentality thing, like I learned a lot about this, funny enough, from soccer. It's more like a mentality thing. Like you have to, people will talk, people will say, give their opinion. They probably don't even know, have any idea about what you're talking about, but just because they sound smarter saying it's not possible or they've never seen it before. And also it's also easier to believe, so then many ambitions die like this.
I think
This is
any kind of serious invention that we are enjoying in our life, there was a person who said it's impossible.
Absolutely.
So that alone tells you that people who are saying it's impossible, it's like sure, they may be right 99% of the time, except where it matters. And so I think the other thing that we touched on briefly before is you have to curate who you feel comfortable taking these opinions from. If it's some
Exactly.
rando saying it's impossible, it's not going to happen, you're not supposed to care about their
Exactly.
opinion in the slightest. And you have to be very particular about who you allow to influence you in that way. So yeah, watch that podcast. I'll link it here and I'll send it to you after this.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, that's all I was gonna talk about today, and it's been a really good conversation. Thank you very much for sharing your experience like you always do. And honestly, I can't thank you enough, Vaseline.
All right. Well,
Yeah,
it's been my pleasure. I've enjoyed this conversation. I think we're having a lot of fun. Time flies when you're having
I
fun.
know. I know.
Yes. To all of you who are watching, thank you. Please join the social media channels and all of the things, like the video and share the video and subscribe to the channel. Thank you for being with us. I hope you find it entertaining. Maybe pick another podcast out of the list if you haven't seen other ones yet. Help the feed the algorithm, so to speak. And we'll see you next week.
You
Bye bye.